Hey everyone, welcome to Brain Health with Dr. Nissen. In this show, we explore the universe's great unknown, the human brain. In my reflections and interviews with guests, we'll go to the forefront of psychiatry, neuroscience, nutrition, and medicine to see how we can enhance our mental health, sharpen our cognition, and reach better performance. This is Brain Health, and I'm Dr. Nissen. Let's dive right in. Hey listeners, I wanted to share this episode of my interview with Calista Anderson, who is the founder of the New Mom Boss podcast. Calista is a nurse herself, and she wanted to have this discussion with me to discuss my new book, Emily Empathy, which is a book all about how to teach empathy and emotional intelligence to kids. I think that you'll find the conversation to be pretty wide-ranging and hopefully pretty interesting. And stay tuned for the end because I want to tell you a little bit more about Calista and the work that she's doing. And I think that it's something that's a really awesome movement that I'd really like to be able to support. So hope you enjoy this episode. And without further ado, let's take a listen.
All right. So today we have Dr. Nicholas Nissen. Dr. Nissen is a medical doctor, author, and speaker. He has published on topics ranging from mental health to surgery and medical education. He is the host of the Brain Health with Dr. Nissen podcast, a show discussing how to enhance mental health, sharpen cognition, and optimize performance. Dr. Nissen is trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and recently published his first children's book called Emily Empathy, which teaches children how to empathize and develop the emotional intelligence they need for cultivating strong relationships and resilient mental health. Without further ado, let's get into the interview. Okay, let's welcome Dr. Nicholas Nissen to the show. Thank you for coming on today, Nick.
Pleasure to be here, Calista.
I'm so glad you can join us. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
It looks amazing and I can't wait to get my hands on it. Is it sold out?
It may be sold out right now. We sold a lot at the beginning, but as far as I know, it should be replaced pretty quick here soon.
Okay. Because I was trying to get it and they're selling like hotcakes, it looks like. So yeah, please restock ASAP.
I will.
Okay, so let's start with what is empathy? I know this is a topic you are very passionate about and a focus in your practice. So can you give us your definition of empathy?
Sure. So empathy is literally the ability to feel into somebody. If you were to break down the word M in pathy. I like to think of the brain and the mind as sort of like the digestive tract. And as you know, as a nurse, you know, it can cause severe life-threatening disease if you get an obstruction in that digestion that's happening. And similarly with humans, severe life-threatening disease can happen if we are continually obstructing our thoughts, obstructing our emotions and feelings. And empathy can play a really important role in our encouraging somebody to kind of spill out their thoughts and their feelings. So by feeling into somebody, the empathy needs to begin with curiosity and us being receptive. And so by asking somebody what they're thinking, ask them what they're thinking about, it can begin to create sort of this path of thoughts and feelings that, you know, that help to make sure that these thoughts and feelings aren't becoming obstructed.
Wow. I've never thought of that as a comparing it to a digestive system. That makes a lot more sense when you think about it that way. That's really great. I was telling my daughter I was going to do this interview with you and we were going to talk about empathy. And she asked me what that was. So I was trying to explain it to her. Now, after this, I'll re-explain it to her with that analogy. That's great.
I can go a little bit more into kind of how it's done as well, which I think is an important part of the definition. So the first disclaimer is that I am no expert at empathy in my personal life. It's something that takes practice, and I think it takes practice for everyone, no matter you know, how kind of a person you are. You know, people think of empathy and they think of that it's sort of this disposition. It's to be kind, it's to be friendly, it's to talk with a soft voice and be like, there, everything will be okay. But really, it's a pretty pretty specific thing, which is, like I said, to encourage somebody to say and speak their thoughts and feelings so that you can really feel into what is happening in their mind. So to kind of go into how empathy is done and what really I talk about in the book is that it begins with, first of all, you know, collecting somebody's thoughts and being curious about that. So in order to do empathy, there needs to be two things for the person who's emotional. First of all, you need to demonstrate to them that you're a willing listener and you're looking to participate in this. And second of all, you need to show to them that this is a you know, a comfortable and a safe environment to be vulnerable in. Because as you know, as everyone knows, when you're feeling really angry about something, when you're feeling really sad about something, it can feel like you're about to walk out on a battlefield with your arms open, you know, ready to take the shots. And so to make an environment where it's safe to do that is really helpful in getting someone to really spill everything out. So what we can do to show just to somebody that we are really a willing recipient of their emotions and of their thoughts is to, first of all, be curious and to validate that whatever they're saying, whatever they're feeling is something that's, you know, it's worthy of your attention. So if you say, if you reply to somebody's, you know, emotional statements with something like, you know, everything will be okay, forget about it, you know, brush it off, that's showing that you're not curious and that you're not really interested in doing this with them, you know, versus if you respond with, oh, you know, tell me more, what's going on with that? You're being curious and you're showing to them, I'm willing to listen to you and I'm willing to hear everything that you have to say. So that can be the first thing of what we do. The second thing is something that I learned from one of my mentors in cognitive behavioral therapy, who's David Burns. He's kind of a well-known psychiatrist at Stanford. He talks about thought empathy, and thought empathy is to repeat back to somebody in their own words something that they just said to show that you're sort of an active listener. So if your kid's really upset and he's like, I hate my homework, this is stupid. And if you respond to them and you say, I hear you, that you hate your homework and that it's stupid, that you know, it speaks to them that you're listening and you're following along. And then similarly, you can respond with some feeling empathy, which David Burns talks about, which is to guess what are some of the feelings or emotions that somebody's having as they're going through this. So if they say, I hate my homework, this is stupid, you say, I hear you, that you hate your homework and this is stupid, you must feel so frustrated. So frustration is probably more or less the emotion they're feeling. You know, this is a podcast for new moms. So as you are probably thinking, you know, you can't do this with your little baby that's crying, but you can try to support them as much as you can. But I think for new moms, it's important to be aware of empathy so that you can start to use it and teach it in your family with your older kids and start to create sort of this environment for your kid as they start to grow up from a very early age. They know that emotions and feelings are a normal thing and that their family's here to listen and respect those feelings and thoughts.
Exactly. As new moms and newborns, we respond to the crying and their movements that show they're uncomfortable. So mm-hmm. I think that's the beginning of practicing empathy. Mm-hmm. And I think when the kids get a little bit older and they start to speak, I think that's where we need more of the words to show empathy and teach empathy.
Right.
So how do you think, how do we start teaching empathy once they're, you know, the toddler stage and a little bit older age?
Yeah. So empathy is really a core piece of emotional intelligence. And that's kind of how I talk about the book in the Amazon link, as you might have seen, is emotional intelligence as well as empathy kind of being the two things that the book is teaching. So there's exercises at the back of the book, and it goes into these pieces of emotional intelligence that I'll talk about here now. So emotional intelligence has a few different definitions, but one of the most common is by Salovey and Mayer. It's called the ability model of emotional intelligence. And I'll say their quote. It is, emotional intelligence is, quote, the capacity to reason about emotions and of emotions to enhance thinking. It includes the abilities to accurately perceive emotions and to access and generate emotions so as to assist thought, to understand emotions and emotional knowledge, and to reflectively regulate emotions so as to promote emotional and intellectual growth. So this can be broken down into four pieces. Emotional intelligence is first perceiving emotions. So just as a little kid, starting to notice, hey, that's sadness, or hey, you know, that's excitement, hey, that's anger. So first perceiving, then understanding emotions. So understanding, hey, what is the context here that's maybe creating these feelings or emotions in somebody? You know, they just dropped their sandwich. Maybe that's why they're feeling upset. So understanding what's going on. And then there's using emotions. So this is really harnessing emotions to be able to then change your thoughts that you're having. And so maybe to try to feel more excited about something to start to form more positive thoughts. And then there's managing emotions, which is really important in little kids to be able to go from, hey, you know, I feel angry now, but I know that it's not appropriate for me to act out. And so to shift and change your emotions from there. These are some of the ways and some of the things that are really important to understand the foundation of empathy. And it's kind of why I wanted to write this book. So the first thing that I start with the kids in the book is perceiving emotions, because as early as the age of about 3 years old, kids can start to really perceive emotions and state them as words. They can start to, you know, see a smiling face and say happy in some cases, or see somebody sad and recognize that it's sad from their face. But believe it or not, there are a lot of kids and even young adults who struggle with this. And it can be a key component of failure in mental health and in relationships. So it's important as a new parent to be mindful about this and to do practices like the ones in this book to be able to, you know, cultivate this ability to perceive emotions in others. So then you can start to understand the emotions, use them and manage emotions effectively.
You mentioned it can have an effect on mental health. What effect does empathy have on mental health?
So this kind of goes to my initial like motivations to study this in the first place, and to go into the area of mental health is recognizing this huge issue that we have in the United States. There are about 1 in 8 kids between the ages of 6 and 12 has suicidal thoughts at some point. 1 in 8 kids. And the second highest cause of suicide, or sorry, the second highest cause of death in kids 10 to 24, or young adults, second highest cause of death is suicide. So there's a huge issue of mental health in our country, and it's been growing. And I think that part of it stems to this issue of a lack of emotional intelligence and a lack of empathy. Because first of all, when we start to practice empathy towards other people, we become more emotionally intelligent with ourselves. So as we are challenging ourselves, even as little kids, to recognize, hey, you know, Sally's crying or angry because she dropped her lunch, that starts to open up something within us to say, hey, you know, I feel a little more angry, or I'm acting a little more, you know, quickly or sharply with my words because I had this thing happen to me earlier today. And we see it even in adults, you know, who haven't been able to maybe fully work on this or fully develop skills of emotional intelligence, that you know, somebody bumps into them and they're like, oh, you know, what a jerk. And we, many of us, myself included, you know, fail to think, hey, you know, maybe they're on a rush to, maybe they're in a rush to go to the hospital because a family member's, you know, dying, or maybe they are blind in one eye and they couldn't see what was happening in their periphery. You know, there's so many ways to kind of open ourselves more and more to trying to think about what the reality of another person is, to try to put ourselves in that person's shoes before we turn to judge them. And that can save us so much angst, so much sadness, so much depression over the course of our lives. And it can enrich our relationships, which we know are one of the biggest protectors against mental illness and one of the biggest tools for leading a healthy and beautiful and meaningful life.
That's true. So what I'm understanding is that we should start teaching empathy to kids. Why would you say that it's important? That's what I'm hearing, but can you elaborate on why empathy is so important to start teaching earlier on?
Yeah. So I think to some degree where it becomes really important is with emotional regulation in kids. So a lot of kids, you know, you might run into this where your kid's working on their homework and they get really upset with their homework, frustrated by it. They don't want to do it. They throw it on the ground. They have a tantrum or a fit and they run off to their room. And we can develop, by doing exercises, we can develop an ability to put a name to this thing that this kid is feeling that leads them to do this, you know, this tantrum or this action. And so by first recognizing, you know, through exercises or through seeing the instance of other people, by flexing that muscle and becoming better at recognizing emotions in other people, we can get better at recognizing emotions in ourselves. And certainly in the realm of cognitive behavioral therapy, I've seen before with kids that they're able to go from, you know, just feeling an emotion and doing something to feeling an emotion, saying what the emotion is, and then instead of, you know, acting out, to turn that into some words that they communicate, that I'm frustrated. Instead of just acting out, they can communicate it. And that can be important, because talking about mental illness, talking about suicide, like I had before, for so many people, they turn to these large actions to show to their parents or to their family or friends that I'm suffering, I'm hurting, I'm in pain, and I don't have any other way to show this to you than to hurt myself. And if we can develop the ability in our kids and our young people to communicate feelings to words, it can help to prevent those large displays of feelings and emotional pain.
So would you say it starts with the parents, and when the child is expressing their emotions, that we validate that and that models empathy for them?
Yeah, I certainly think that it can start with the parents. So to recognize their emotion, to help them to see it and put a name to it, to you know, say back to them what some of their thoughts are, what the feeling is, and to maybe even share how you feel about it as well, to model, you know, a discussion about emotions and thoughts. But also with kids, you can do just very practical little things for just perceiving emotions, which, like I talked about, is kind of the first step for a lot of young kids to say, you know, to see a smiling face and say, what do you think this person's thinking? What could have happened in their day to make them look like this? Or to, if somebody's frowning or sad, say, what do you think this person's feeling? And what could have happened in their day to make them think this way and feel this way? Kind of connecting the thoughts, the events that can happen in someone's lives to their emotional expressions and what they're showing, can be really powerful for the kids' own mental health, but also for helping them to support their family and friends and develop stronger relationships because of it, and really be a role model and an excellent kid or student in their class, and somebody really great in their community.
Nice. You have used the homework example.
Mm-hmm.
And I can really relate to that because my kids have, they go to Kumon. Have you heard of Kumon?
Yeah.
And they have homework, the math homework every day. And we go through this at least twice a week about their homework. And they get very frustrated. And I try to mirror or reflect what they are saying. And they do storm off sometimes. What is a follow-up thing that I can do or other moms can do after you verbalize that you understand how they're feeling and you're acknowledging their feelings?
So this actually is not necessarily something that's in the book, and not necessarily something that I can claim to be a world expert at, but I did have the opportunity on my podcast, which is called Brain Health with Dr. Nissen, to interview probably the world expert on this. His name is Professor Eli Leibowitz, and he's a psychologist at Yale who developed this therapy. It's called SPACE therapy. And what it is a parent-based therapy that is basically to show parents how they can help kids to deal with their anxieties, fears, or worries. So what we do a lot with kids is we try to comfort them in times of fear or anxiety. And what a lot of his research has been showing is that actually that can worsen a dependence of the kid on the parent, especially as the kid's getting older, and that dependence and that inability or rather that practice of sort of running away from fears and anxieties can continue into young adulthood and into adult life as anxiety disorders and other mental illnesses. And he's been able to show his parent-based approach as being a really effective treatment for preventing anxiety in kids and treating anxiety in kids. And basically what it is a practice of getting the kid to face their fears, to getting the kid to face their anxieties, but doing it in a respectful and loving way. And so if you listen to my podcast episode with him, he talks a bit about sort of the nuts and bolts of how to do it. But in essence, what he would say for an instance like that, where the kid, you know, gets frustrated about the homework and storms off, is to be quite persistent as much as a parent can in your very busy world, a very difficult world, but to be persistent of that saying, of trying to encourage and show that you believe in them and say, you know, hey, I know this is really difficult for you. And I know that it's probably really frustrating to work on your homework, but you are a really smart and hardworking kid. And I know that you can really do this well and do this easily with a little bit more time and effort in it. And to bring them down there and get them to do even one more question or something like that before maybe they storm off again, that's one step towards having to go back and face something that you were anxious about, fearful about, or just frustrated with, and to face it instead of running away. So I find that to be really powerful because sometimes talking about empathy, talking about emotional intelligence, people can think like, oh, you just want to, you know, pad your kids with just love and comfort throughout their whole lives. And that's not going to prepare them for the tough, hard, real world. Right. And it needs to be sort of a balance of with a newborn, it's impossible to spoil a newborn. You do pad them and cover them with love and tenderness. Absolutely. And affection. But as they progress in life, you can start to, along with empathy and emotional intelligence, you know, make sure that you're incorporating these sort of fear-facing, anxiety-overcoming sort of practices like there is in space therapy.
Right. That actually reminds me of my 9.5-month-old right now is already starting to walk. And so, you know, when he takes a couple steps and it's scary, you know, just allowing him to do that. And if he falls, it's okay. And, you know, I think that is building up his confidence little by little. But yeah, I guess that is very comparable to the homework situation where they're afraid of the hard problems and they just don't want to do it. And it's a balance of, like you said, of showing empathy, but also redirecting them back to whatever it is that they're fearing.
Right, exactly.
And I'd love to hear more about, or I'd love to hear that episode. So we'll attach that episode to our show notes so parents can learn more about that as well.
Great.
Are there any other words we can communicate to our kids about empathy?
Yeah. So I didn't want to blab too long about it, but there's quite a few things that I haven't touched on yet. I had talked about, you know, when somebody's, and this could be with a friend, with your spouse, with or with an older kid as well. You know, when somebody's saying something to you that's clearly sort of emotionally charged or difficult, you know, this could be something like, I'm totally worthless. I can't do anything right. And everything, and every time I try, I just mess up more and more. You know, these are some really emotionally charged, sort of difficult statements. And like I said, you can validate it. You can repeat some of their thoughts back to them. And then you can use feeling empathy, like I said, which is where you think of what emotions maybe they're thinking and you propose them to them, saying, you know, in that instance that I just said, you could say, man, you know, that's really disheartening, or it seems really difficult and trying. Or with a kid who, you know, is struggling with their homework, like I said before, to say, you know, it's very frustrating, or it feels just totally overwhelming. And then, as I mentioned very briefly, you could also share how you're feeling. So this is part of with empathy, to create an environment that's safe to where you don't feel like you're being judged. So if you were to say something like, I'm feeling very sad hearing this, then that's showing, hey, you're sharing your emotions. I'll share some of my emotions too, so you know that I'm not judging you or just looking at you and watching you. And then you can do a compliment as well. And I talked about this with the space therapy. So you could say, you know, I'm really impressed by how you've continued to push forward despite this. It sort of builds up the person when they're feeling very maybe self-conscious or very hard on themselves in this moment that they're sharing their emotions. And then finally, and maybe the most important part of this, thinking about emotions and thoughts again, like digestion, is to be curious. So maybe finish up whatever you say with something like, with a question. So what are some of these things that you feel like you keep messing up? Something like that will get somebody to keep talking, keep spilling it out, so they're not holding anything back.
Right. So we have to allow them the space to let all of their emotions out and then redirect them.
Exactly.
I'm going to try a little bit more of that today. We have Kumon scheduled at 2, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And all of this, you know, is a really tall order for parents. And actually something I talked about with this Professor Leibowitz is that a lot of people blame parents for mental illness. They blame parents for they blame parents for like intellectual disabilities. Parents have been blamed for things like autism or schizophrenia, which have no basis at all in parenting. And so I think it's really important for parents, especially new moms, to not be too hard on themselves and not think that they need to do everything perfectly, and to show a little bit of empathy to themselves and to other moms and sort of practice that. But so much of this and so much of what I've seen and learned in my own world is, you know, that it's just all about the little baby steps that you take. And even if you don't get into empathy with your child to a very, you know, profound degree, you can just sharing moments with them, reading a storybook like this one, it's a small step to where you start to introduce them to some of these small, very basic, very elementary ideas, like perceiving emotions, like what does happiness look like on a face? What does sadness look like on a face? You know, these are simple things that really will go a long way. And over the course of the child's life and all this time that you have with a child as a young mom, it will all build up. You know, not everything needs to be done perfectly. It will all get there with time.
Right. This is a long haul game.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about this topic?
Well, I would encourage parents or new moms that are listening to this to, first of all, this is something I didn't touch on yet, that the importance of reading with kids when you're young. So empathy aside, emotional intelligence aside, reading with kids is super important. We know from so many different studies the effects of just the number of words that kids are exposed to and the effect that this will have on their academic performance later in life. To expose your kids to more words, more vocabulary, will have big impacts on their lives. And you can do this through the practice of reading with them, like a bedtime story. And that was one of my motivations for doing this. So I encourage all the new moms listening this, really from quite young, to start to read with your kid, and to share it. I would love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram as Dr. Nissen, that's Dr.NISSEN. And if you could, if you're, you know, spending some time reading with your kid, or you have a favorite book or story and you want to share that on Instagram and tag me in that, or tag Calista, I would love to see that. And I encourage you to be active with that, to encourage your mom friends as well to be reading with your kids. And at the very least, to take the small step of maybe beginning to practice emotional recognition, of you know, maybe playing games to say, you know, what are these emotions that I'm showing? What could I be thinking that's leading to these emotions? Just doing that will really start to form some of these ideas in the kid's head and increase their emotional intelligence to create a lot of benefits in their life from there on out.
Yes, I second the reading to your children as soon as possible, even just 4 or 5 months old when you're putting them to bed. It does really help them. I homeschool, and that's a big part of our homeschool is even not bedtime stories. Like during the day, we'll read to them. And when they started learning how to read, I kind of backed off, but they love it. And it does expand their vocabulary. So I totally believe in that too. And I second that. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I'm so glad that we got to connect, and I wish you all the best on Emily Empathy, and we'll link the Amazon link on our show notes and all your other contact information and your social media handles on our show notes as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Calista. It was so nice to meet you.
Thank you. Okay, friends, we have come to the end of this bonus episode. I hope you guys keep this episode in your back pocket for later when your babies are a little older. It goes really fast, so it's good to plant these little seeds along the way. To get the details about everything mentioned in this episode, go to the show notes at newmomboss.com/5B. That's newmomboss.com/5B. Talk to you guys soon. Have a great day.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And as I had mentioned before, Calista Anderson has a really cool mission going on with her work at New Mom Boss. She has a new mom prep school that is coming out this September. It's a 5-week online course, which, along with group coaching and other pieces to it, guides women in preparing themselves, their home, their career, everything that it takes to be prepared for their new mom life. So I wanted to mention that because if you'd like more information, you can find it on her website at newmomboss.com. And again, I really enjoyed my conversation with Calista and our continued work together, and I couldn't suggest her more strongly. So go and check that out at newmomboss.com, and let her know that I sent you, and I hope that you can be connected. So thank you for listening, and have an awesome day. Hey, listeners, some of you have so kindly asked how you can support the podcast. You can help by supporting us on Patreon, so please kindly find our Patreon link in the show notes. You can also support us by leaving a review, so please let me know what you think about the show by leaving a review on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook as Dr. Nissen. And it's important to note that this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. And the use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is content of this podcast and is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.